Hello, it's so nice to have you with me today. Thanks for listening to What We Teach Our Children. I'm Kim Clyden. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? Well, they say it takes a village, or what we might call today a community. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. This podcast is about everyone who plays a role in that story at every level of society. In the previous episode, entrepreneur Tim Niesler talked about how his exposure to business and finances through his parents set him up for future success. But it hasn't been without a lot of self-development and learning from mentors and coaches, skills that make him a better leader and dad. The business coaching industry is experiencing unprecedented growth, 33% from 2015 to 2023, an average 6.7% per annum. And future growth projections for the multi-billion dollar sector to 2032 are set to double at 13.9% per annum. Deb Ray entered the workforce as a university graduate with a Bachelor of Arts. Since then, her studies in professional and community development provided opportunities in regional Queensland, Australia. That led to her own business as a consultant, coaching leaders and teams. Welcome, Deb. You were just telling me about how daunting going out on your own was and that you weren't sure what kind of person you wanted to be in your business 13 years ago. What kind of person have you become in that business?
That's been really interesting because, I had this stereotypical idea in my head of what a businesswoman is. You know, it's someone who dresses beautifully and wears high heel shoes and talks really fast and carries a briefcase. You know, it was such a stereotypical, outdated perception. And I have a background in working in not-for-profits and working in community development. I don't match that image. So I tried to be that image for a while and it just didn't quite work. And I can't work out why. So then I really had to understand what is it that I want to be. And I think it comes back to what is it that you want to provide your customers? So what do I want them to get from being around me? What's the difference that I want to make in their lives? And that's where I started from. So that means that I'm someone who cares. I'm someone who looks towards the future to see, you know, just a step ahead to see, yes, I can see this is what you're experiencing now, but I can see this is where you want to be. And I can hold that vision while we work towards it. I can help people sit in the issues that they're feeling now and be okay with sitting in those issues and, you know, create that safe space for them to be able to work through what's happening for them to get to where they want to be.
How does that process begin? I mean, if someone is stuck, and so many of us are on so many different levels, it's not just about business, a lot of that's personal growth that needs to happen. Where do you begin when you're working with someone in trying to unravel that to get to the root of it?
Yes, because as you said, when we're stuck, we often don't realise we're stuck. It's like the fish in the water. The fish is just in the water. It doesn't know what the water looks like or smells like. It's just the water. So first you have to help people see what the water is like so they can understand what's creating that stuckness. And sometimes that's a very gentle, slow process of helping people see that just dropping seeds about, you know, maybe something could be different. Maybe this doesn't have to be this way. Maybe there's another way of doing these things. Maybe the outcome can be different. And so people start to question what they're seeing around themselves. And yes, and that takes a long time. That's very slow. Normally people come to me, customers come to me because they're experiencing an issue that they see as belonging to another person. This person's doing this and it's not right, or this process doesn't work. But those issues might be related to those particular individuals or processes, but often it's the system. We need to look at the whole system that we're in, the culture that we're in, to really understand what are the issues.
sounds like change management more than anything. Why are people so resistant or find change so difficult?
Because we're creatures of habit, and we're creatures of comfort and certainty. We like it when it's certain. We like it when we know what's going to happen. And the reality is that we never do. So the biggest thing I think we can learn and that we can teach our children is to understand that things will change, that everything in our world is temporary. And that's not actually scary. That's just how it is. And that's actually fantastic, because that means that the things that we don't like, eventually they will change too. And that there's so much more that we can experience and so much more that can happen if we can roll with the flow of that temporary nature of change, of everything that is in our world.
So does that come down to nature or nurture? Because some people are born with these outgoing, adventurous personalities, or it appears so. Or is it something that we can cultivate with children from birth or before?
I can only speak from my own experience, and I'm not an outgoing, extroverted person. I'm an introvert. I learned about change because when my first husband died, when I was 36 years old, and we were living overseas, and everything about my life had to change because of that experience. And I was very much of the opinion at that time that once you got everything sorted, then it stayed like that. You know, I thought my first husband and I just thought we would be 95 years old and die lying beside each other in bed one night. And, you know, that there was no concept of the world can change in an instant.
I don't think anyone goes into a relationship expecting, you know, that something bad might happen so early on either.
Yes, yes. But the reality is that it can. And we don't want to live with that and let it scare us. But it is about understanding that everything is temporary and you can live through it. I lived through it and I have created a life that I love. So I think we can learn that. And I'm not extroverted. You know, I'm an introvert. I think about things carefully and try to understand why things happen. And we can all do that. We can all learn to be okay with change, to embrace it, to understand that there's a lot of great stuff that comes from it. It's hard when those kinds of things happen, but change always brings another opportunity.
What steps did you take to cultivate what you know now? Because obviously you didn't become this overnight.
No, it took a very long time because I resisted it for a long time, and just in my head I was thinking, this is not how the world should work. The world should be kind to people who are good, and if you set things up and you do things right, then, you know, there should be a good consequence from that. But my husband and I were good people, but things just happened. So I fought it for a long time. But when I started to accept it, and when I started to get curious, when I started to really get curious about what does this mean, what does this mean about change? Is change actually bad? Should I be scared of things that I don't understand? Should I be worried when I don't know what's going to happen next? And I think that's one of the hugest things that I've learned, is to be okay to sit in uncertainty. When I can sit in that and I can be okay with it, and I can then start to get curious about what might be coming next. And that's just asking myself those questions. That's about just physically feeling the uncertainty and the sense of anxiety that might create, and being okay that this is okay. It's just, I don't know what's going to happen next. It doesn't mean that the thing that's going to happen next is going to be bad. It just means I don't know, and I actually don't need to know. What can I get curious about? What can I check out? What am I interested in what's happening here? What can I explore? So I move away from the anxiety and move into curiosity and excitement.
That is a process, and it starts with self-awareness. How did you cultivate that sense of actually sitting in the feeling and noticing the bodily responses that we have that are actually making us aware of how we feel?
I did a lot of reading after my husband died, a lot of professional development, a lot of personal development, and read lots of information, and just started to try to find, I was just trying to understand what was happening with me. And I think it was also just slowing down enough to experience that. I've just actually come from a yoga retreat, and, you know, that's a big part of what we did at that retreat with the yoga, was just taking your time to feel whatever it is you feel throughout your body and being okay with whatever you feel as well. And then making an informed decision based on what's happening for you and deciding rather than reacting or resisting or pushing away, denying the feelings and thoughts that are there, which of course they won't be denied. They'll just get bigger and bigger until they come out when you're at the checkout in the supermarket or some other inappropriate time.
And this is something I think we need to understand about other people and their reactions or responses at those inappropriate times. How often do you think we can see something and immediately make up our mind it's this or that and then discard, you know, even coming into contact with that person?
Absolutely, yes. That's certainty again, isn't it? We want to know, I understand what that person is like. I've seen someone like that before. I've seen those characteristics. I know exactly what's going on. So again, it's about being okay with not knowing all of those things, being open to understand, to exploring and being curious about, I wonder what this person is like, and actually find out. And I know I've had those thoughts because it's automatic. It's our brain taking those shortcuts. Sometimes you need to do that. Yes, you get that sense of this is not safe. Yes, you need that. But also sometimes I've made those assumptions and just been completely wrong. So yes, it's the curiosity and compassion.
That's something we have spoken about on this program, actually, is developing curiosity in children. Do you have any tips that maybe you employed to make that transition between uncertainty and curiosity?
Asking questions, asking lots of questions of myself and trying to question my thinking. So the question can be, what am I thinking? And then what am I thinking about my thinking? I am a perfectionist and I know that I can be really judgmental, including of myself, very critical and harsh. So helping to think, what am I thinking about my thinking as well, then helps me to understand, am I being critical? Am I being overly harsh on myself? Or am I making assumptions? Or am I making a judgment about that person based on what? So I'm assuming this person is a certain way or they're potentially dangerous based on what? So you just start to understand how your thought processes are working and how you're making those decisions. And once you understand them, then you can change them if you want.
So how can parents or teachers manage children's curiosity in a way that's productive for everyone?
Well, I think, can the questions be thrown back to the child? If the child's asking why, they're curious, they want to know, and we want to nurture that. So maybe asking them, saying, well, I have an idea, but what do you think? Why do you think it's like that? And they can make up whatever story they like, which means that their creativity and their curiosity is being nurtured. It doesn't have to be the right answer. They might ask later and you can tell them the right answer, or you can tell them the right answer if you'd like. But letting them build that curiosity and creativity for themselves. Because if we just always answer the question for them, then they stop being curious. If I want the answer, I just ask. There's no thought beyond what the answer is. But if we let them create the answer, then they're exploring their own world and they're exploring the universe themselves.
You work with a lot of people in business as leaders of the community. How important is it to develop those critical thinking, questioning, curious values and traits when building future leaders?
Absolutely critical. I think people are so busy. We don't have a lot of time to think, to just sit and reflect. And that means that we get stuck in those one ways of doing things. And I know sometimes some of the workshops that we've done or some of the coaching, really it is just about creating that space sometimes where people can reflect, where they can just think about their own thought patterns and what's been happening and reflect back on that and try to understand why or how it happened so they can make some choices about that. I think it's really critical that we give ourselves that time to do it because we do just get stuck in doing things the same way, the same time, and thinking that's the only way when our brains just really need that time to process, to reflect, to let all of that sink in and to decide what do I want from that and what don't I. And, you know, even good, great sleep is, that's when we process a lot of that information and when we're busy and we're rushing and we're exhausted. We might not even be getting the sleep, which means we hardly ever get time to process information. We're just kind of running on this surface level all the time.
Patterns of self-destruction, I like to refer to it as.
Mm.
And I think that a lot of this goes unnoticed as well, because we're not actually cognitive, we're functioning in the real world. When we start questioning things, that can sometimes also be a pattern where we were told not to question anything, just do what you're told. Is it dangerous sometimes to start questioning everything? And what reflection will that have in society if everyone started questioning?
I think we still have to keep questioning, but it doesn't mean that everything we question we have to do, or that everything we question is right or good, but I think the questioning is important. I grew up in a family where you did what you were told, and there wasn't much space to question, but then my parents allowed me to be an exchange student, and I went to Sri Lanka for a year, and I came back with lots and lots of different ideas after that year that I think really scared my parents, because they thought that because I thought those things or was talking about those things or questioning those things, that meant I wanted to do them. And, you know, different political views and religious views, and it really frightened them. But I came to understand that I don't actually want to do them necessarily. I just want to understand them and know what's out there and explore them and then make some informed choices. But I needed to keep questioning.
And that's true of everything, and particularly a couple of points you made around political views or religious views. I know when I was working in radio, I did a whole series trying to understand the various religions we have, even in a small community. Because I think if you understand something, it demystifies and can break down walls of fear that people hold around certain beliefs. It doesn't matter what the religion is, if we understand why people choose to subscribe to that view and what it means for them in their life, we go, oh, well, actually, that's not so bad. And I have similar views. I just do it differently.
Slightly differently, yes. And I think it comes back to that sense of certainty as well, that you can have the opinion that my religion is good and I feel certain in it, and those other religions question that certainty and make me feel insecure. But once you understand those religions, it's easier to have a conversation. It's easier to understand each other. It's easier to work through conflict. It's easier to be able to work together. It doesn't mean you have to agree with them, but it's easier when you understand them and you start seeing them as people who are just doing their best as well, and you take that fear away.
We can look around the world in so many different places at the moment and see so much fear and so much where people who think they can control outcomes are maybe stuck in that uncertainty, but they're not going to show it. What would you say is one of the key skills for us to focus on now in developing those future leaders that we are now raising, you know, through their adolescent years?
Always for me, it's curiosity and compassion. And I think also that comes back to being able to sit in that uncertainty. I read something a few years ago that said that it's important to have technical skills, it's important to have intelligence, but the world is changing so fast, faster than ever before, obviously, that if we don't have that capacity to sit in uncertainty, then we can't use those other skills. And I work in psychological safety, so, you know, the skills around emotional intelligence and working with other people, they're going to be much more important in future as well. Because, again, we can have all of the technical skills and the intelligence, but if we can't communicate, if we can't connect with people, they're the skills that AI can't do. They're the skills that we will need as people. And they're the skills that can support us as human beings. We know that there's much more loneliness in the world than there has ever been before as well. And that comes back to being able to connect with other people, which is about having a conversation, but it's about connecting as human beings on a very human level. So for me, that's the curiosity that helps us through the uncertainty and being able to deal with change and being able to deal with whatever comes up. And the compassion is what helps us to be able to connect with other people as well. For me, I think they're two integral skills that will help our kids to really have a great future.
Here's to that future, Deb. I'd like to see that. And I think there's a couple of things you touched on we probably need to delve into a little bit deeper, perhaps in another episode.
We could do that. That sounds wonderful.
Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been fabulous reconnecting.
I've loved it. Thank you, Kim.
Professional development consultant and coach, Deb Ray, providing a perspective of change that we can all take something from. If we model an acceptance of change and build resilience in our children, then perhaps they'll be ready for the challenge of change ahead. If you'd like to know more about Deb Ray and her business, you can check out all the details in the description below this podcast episode. And for more with us, connect with me at kimclyden.com. Like what you're listening to? Don't keep it a secret. Tell everyone you know about it. This podcast is recorded at Launchpad Studios thanks to Split Spaces, a nest for new ideas.